of minor offenses, traffic stops and stops and searches, such as the case of George Floyd, intervention of police as first responders to mental health crises, and special police operations like the case of Breonna Taylor. Many of the victims did not pose an imminent threat of death or serious injury to justify lethal force under international legal standards. Harmful stereotypes shape encounters between people of African descent and law enforcement, and gang-related police operations in communities of African descent are frequently influenced by racial bias and stereotypes that associate those communities by criminality, Bashele found, citing the commission report. Challenges to holding police officers accountable for violating human rights of people of African descent, detailed by Bashele, include the absence of independent accountability mechanisms and deficient investigations, prosecutorial direction and reluctance to file charges against police, qualified immunity and police unions, citing the Commission's report discussion of these issues. As did the Commission report, Bashele cited a 2021 University of Chicago study which found that use of force legislation and directives in the largest cities of the 29 wealthiest countries often did not comply with international human rights law. No state has comprehensively accounted for the past or for the current impact of systematic racism, Bashele notes, adding, structures and systems that were designed and shaped by enslavement, colonialism, and successive racially discriminatory policies and systems must be transformed. Jamil Dakwar, director of the ACLU's Human Rights Program, also responded to Bashele's report, stating, "This historic report provides a blueprint for the United States and other countries to begin reckoning with the long history of systematic racism that permeates through policing and other state violence and structural discrimination against black people. We welcome this report and urge the Biden administration and Congress to heed the recommendations and take bold action to eliminate systematic racism in the United States, starting with policing institutions." Bashele writes, "Reparatory justice requires a multi-pronged approach that is grounded in international rights law. Reparations are one element of accountability and redress. For every violation, there should be repair of the harms caused through adequate, effective, and prompt reparation." She notes that reparations are not limited to monetary compensation, but also include formal apologies, memorializations, institutional and educational reforms, and acknowledgement of the legal responsibility of the state for violations linked to truth, justice, guarantees of non-recurrence.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Start.
Movement.
Speak.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islam my deen.
Islam my deen.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, brothers and sisters, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so very much for joining us on today's episode of Youth Station here on IRIB English Radio. I am your humble host, Zainab, and in the studio, I am honored to be joined by my brother in faith and humanity.
Thank you, Brother Habib, at your service.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being with us. First and foremost, may Allah reward you.
Greaten your reward.
Yes, and I think being able to cry for Abu Abdullah alayhi salam is in and of itself a reward.
It is actually.
Isn't it?
It is.
To have the love. Isn't there a hadith that says when Allah wishes well for one of his servants, he places the love of Hussein alayhi salam in his heart.
And visiting Imam Hussein as well.
Exactly. So just to be able to love him enough to cry for him is a reward itself. What else do you want from life? Basically, Muslims and mostly Shias and even a lot of people from other faiths and denominations, you know, if they don't mourn, at least they commemorate Ashura and the events that took place in Karbala and the tragedy of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam.
The rest of the Imam alayhi salam, do you see them as role models?
They are. I hope I'm following.
What's the difference between Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, or Imam Kadhim, or Imam Ridha alayhi salam, who accepted, of course, you know, after the pressure, accepted being Wali al-Ahd, accepted allegiance? Or what's the difference with Imam Hassan alayhi salam, who just agreed
to the peace treaty?
To the peace treaty. Imam Hussein alayhi salam as well. Imam Hassan fought at the beginning.
Obviously.
He went through war, right? He had people underneath him. Imam Hussein alayhi salam, in your state of mind, in your beliefs, in your eyes, as well, had people, but then they left. People
For me, there's no difference between what Abbasid Imam al-Hussein did and what Imam al-Hussein did.
One pledged allegiance with Muawiyah, the other didn't.
It was just a means. The objective was the same. The objective, the goal, the main priority were all the same.
To protect the Shia's blood?
To please God.
To please God?
To carry out their mission. And that's how they did it. Based on their circumstances.
Each imam had their own circumstance. Each imam had their own role. You could learn from each role. You could take from each role. What I want to say here is that I hate this idea that of people trying to belittle the sorrowness or crying towards about Imam Hussein.
Okay, that's good. That's good. Let's work on that. Let's work on that. You say that the greatest part, if not only, profound aspect of Abu Abdullah's movement was to stir.
I'm not saying to stir. I'm not saying that it's to stir. I'm saying that the A'imma alayhum as-salam, our school of thought, whenever we see, when it comes to Imam Hussein alayhi salam, they're always ordering us. They're always telling us to cry. They're always telling us to.
It's just a means of commemoration. It's our way of celebrating and remembering him.
Imam Hussein, there is no such thing as, for example, always remember al-amr bil-ma'ruf wa nahy al-munkar that Imam Hussein alayhi salam did in the sayings. I'm asking you, who, for example, wants to take this new idea, wants to take something else other than crying. What do you want from the story of Imam Hussein alayhi salam? If you say, for example, being a good person, let's say, right? Having good characteristics, being a good believer. The rest of the Imam alayhi salam also have this character.
Are you saying that crying for him alone, just crying the for story Imam, of Imam Hussein is enough? I don't need to adhere to any other principle that Imam Hussein fought for, just as long as I cry for him.
That's the thing. What did he fight for?
That's what I'm saying.
What did he fight for?
That's what I'm saying.
Did he fight defending?
He fought for the same principles Imam al-Hassan alayhi salam signed a peace treaty for, okay? The principles and the objectives are the same. The methods and circumstances were different, right? And at the end of the day, I cry for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam to reinforce my adherence to those common principles. You know what I'm saying? And that's what makes Imam al-Hussein's movement the most profound, because no other a'imma managed to stir and provoke emotions on the same level as Abu Abdullah. They all talked about Amr bil-Ma'ruf. They all talked about justice. They all talked about piety. They all talked about submission to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. But Imam al-Hussein did it through blood. And that's what makes him awesome.
No,
tell me you disagree with me.
I disagree.
Okay, fine.
I disagree. The thing that what I want to state is that there's something. Sometimes we talk about the Imam altogether, their movement altogether, their duty as the Imam alayhi salam. Then there's also the story of Imam Hussein alayhi salam by itself. Which two are you talking about?
They're all the same. There's something special about the story of Imam Hussein. There's a oneness in it all.
There's something in the story of Imam Hussein that differs from the rest. That makes it special, and it clings the Shia, the followers, towards Imam Hussein alayhi salam.
Because of the level of emotions he provokes.
It has the power to make people attached to the story.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm. That's why he's the Safinat al-Najat.
Usually, how do we do it?
By crying.
That's it. That's what I want to say.
Yeah, I agree with
you. You're getting closer to the Imam alayhi
salam. Bro, as always, for the listeners who've been listening to us throughout the years, I'm sure you know exactly what I'm saying. As always, once again, we've come to the exact same conclusion.
I want to ask you, what did you learn from the movement of Imam Hussein alayhi salam? How do you put it in your daily life?
So there's two things to it, right? If we're going to talk about it on a personal level.
Yes.
Number one, because of the reasons that you stated, because of the emotional bond Imam al-Hussein managed to create between himself and all of humanity, I have developed a very strong, very special love for him. And that has led me to want to align all of my actions naturally with Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam and get his approval in every aspect of my life.
Okay.
Right? So maybe Imam Hussein alayhi salam didn't specifically talk about a certain matter on Ashura, though I believe Ashura is so comprehensive and it's so inclusive that it basically covers every aspect of a human being's life. It's like the Quran unfolded into half a day. But even if Imam Hussein alayhi salam didn't talk about a specific matter on the day of Ashura, because I love him so much, I want to get close to him in everything. That's what I learned from Imam Hussein. I learned love from him. I learned how to live from him.
So pretty much he became your role model, to go to person to take, you know, your daily lifestyles from.
Yeah, exactly. Like, no matter what I'm going to do, I'd be like, is this going to get me closer to him or not? Ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, you're listening to Youth Station here on IRB English Radio. We're going to be back after a short break, so stay with us.
لك لبيك يا ابن الزهراء شو رايس لبيك ما لك لبيك يا ابن الزهراء شو رايس لبيك ما لبيك يا حسين لبيك يا حسين
Thank you for joining us again. You're listening to Youth Station. I'm Zainab and my co-host,
Brother Habib, at your service. You being sad and sorrow for his, you know, tragedies, then having a connection with him. Yeah.
Probably, yeah.
Take that away. What else? I was asking a different, other than this, what do you have?
No, that's it.
That's it.
No, it's because I love him so much.
How did this love come?
From
not because he wanted to go to a war or wanted to do a revolt or anything. Just, you know, because it's tragedy.
Probably, yes. But then also, you know, it's a yes and no. Imam al-Hussein could have not affected people on the scale had he not been tragically killed the way he was. Right?
Okay.
That's an obvious fact. No one's going to dispute with it.
All right.
Right? But then again, people do establish such a bond with other Aimma as well. Like my Baba. He's crazy about Amir al-Mu'mineen. Everything about his life is like Amir al-Mu'mineen this, Amir al-Mu'mineen. He's memorized all of the sermons of Amir al-Mu'mineen. He knows the Nahj al-Balagha by heart. Amir al-Mu'mineen wasn't slaughtered in cold blood the way Abu Abdullah was with his companions. He was martyred, but it wasn't as brutal as Abu Abdullah alayhi salam. You know, I'm saying that yes and no. Imam al-Hussein managed to have such a profound impact on humanity because of the manner of his uprising and death. But on the other hand, if that factor did not exist, Imam al-Hussein would still be Imam al-Hussein. The same way Imam al-Hassan is still Imam al-Hassan. Because kulluhum nur al-wahid. They're the same light, the same people, the same objectives, the same goals.
Exactly.
Just different circumstances and means.
Okay.
All right.
But you didn't answer me the question.
What?
And that is, if you take away the crying part, you take away the sorrow, you take away, let's say that Imam Hussein alayhi salam didn't go to Karbala. Karbala didn't happen. Right? What do you learn from Imam Hussein alayhi salam?
He died some other way?
Let's say he died a normal death.
He can't. He's an imam.
I'm saying imagine it.
No, but he can't. You know, it's like, if he didn't die in Karbala, he would have been martyred some other way. Right. Then how is that
he
different?
He was poisoned like Imam Kadhim alayhi salam. All right, but not in prison.
Well, I probably would have learned something from his... See, there's this thing, right? The Aimma alayhi salam, they all share common principles, right? And everything they did was toward the same unanimous direction. Pleasing Allah, carrying out their mission, and creating awareness among people. Establishing justice to the best of their capacity.
Mama Askar wasn't able to make that much awareness through people.
But he did create awareness for those he had to in regard with his son, which was his greatest mission.
All right.
Do you understand what I'm trying to say? Like, I don't want this to turn into a theology, aqaid lesson for our listeners. But I'm saying that, yes, Imam al-Hussein did what he did, was able to do what he has done to humanity because of those very peculiar circumstances. But if those peculiar circumstances had not taken place, he would have still done something awesome, just like every other imam did.
All right.
What do I learn from Imam al-Hassan al-Askari alayhi salam? Total submission.
So, in conclusion. I reached to my point. There is nothing else behind the story of Imam Hussein in Karbala other than sorrow and grief. If you want to take away the sorrow and grief, you'd have to take away the entire movement of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Taking away the entire movement of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, you have to start a new story. So at the end of the day, crying for Imam Hussein alayhi salam
is profound. It's definitely very profound.
It's the fundamental, it's the base. It's
yeah,
the,
but crying because, not for the sake of crying alone. It's not crying because we cry. It's crying because of the injustice that was committed against him.
Because when I cry, I'm crying, yeah, like how you stated, rahmatullahum. I'm crying because of what affected them. I'm crying what the pains that they went through. Their
because
pain
you
is
love
my
them.
Pain. Exactly.
Because you love them.
Exactly. And not only that, but I'm doing something even more. Is'ad Fatima alayhi salam, wasli Rasulillah. Is'ad, of course, is not the translation of happiness. Is'ad is something else.
What does it mean?
Arabs, the mother, usually when her sons die or someone, a family member dies, her tears dry off because she cried so much.
Right.
So she needs some other people to come over
and cry with her
and to help her.
Right.
As'ada, meaning to help her. So you come and say, I've seen Arabic women do it, Iraqi women actually do it. She's sitting on the grave. She can't cry. There are no tears. The woman comes. He was handsome. He had two children. She brings up the tributes.
Why?
He was brave. And then she would start crying
Why?
Again. Trust
That's
me.
That's torture.
I have a family story. That's not torture. It brings bond together.
Okay.
It brings bond. Because she wants to cry, but she's not able to cry.
There's a great mystery and unimaginable merit in crying for Abu Abdullah al-Hussein alayhi salam. Otherwise, history would have taken a different course altogether. That's all the time we have for today's episode of Youth Station. Thank you for being with me and Brother Habib. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
I am what I am because you made. I have what I have. My love is strong because you are the one I call creator, my Alpha and Omega, my protector and my maker. Because of you, in weakness I am braver, my defender and my savior, my giver and my taker. Abiding in silence with patience and guidance, aware when I need you, a light when I seek you, justice, forgiveness, the strength in my weakness, and my love.
food for thought.
Hello everyone, and let us enlighten our minds with a wonderful saying from the martyr of Karbala, Imam Hussein, peace be upon him. There are 70 advantages for saying salam, that is peace upon you. 69 for the one who greets first, and 1 for the person who responds to the greeting.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The light.
A French graffiti artist has created a monumental mountaintop project to encourage a more contemplative approach to life, aiming at lifting people's spirits. The giant 1,500 square meter painting is called A New Lease of Life. It was painted on the summit of Mollison Peak in the western Swiss Alps. The 32-year-old artist says he was inspired by the likeness of childlike wonder. The mural depicts a little boy blowing bubbles in an area known for its clouds. The artist says he wanted to reflect the link between children and sky gazing.
I think we live in a world that includes anxiety, and we need a little lightness to balance it. So I believe that the clouds mean dreams and imagination. When we were kids, we liked to imagine shapes in the clouds and so on. And I believe that this is a moment where we have to breathe and also imagine the world of tomorrow with a certain lightness through daydreaming.
Saif also says he designs his creations to fit in with the environment using biodegradable paints made from natural pigments. The French artist is known for his massive graffiti works on grass that are best seen from the air. Some of his other works have adorned an impoverished shanty town in South Africa and the lawn in front of the UN headquarters in Geneva. One of Mexico's largest zoos has launched a one-of-a-kind exhibition, with the star of the show being a manatee couple. Visitors will be able to see the couple at the new exhibition, which is part of the largest aquarium in the country. The zoo received the manatee couple from the Caribbean with the intention of raising awareness for the protection of the species. Part of the ticket proceeds will go towards conservation efforts. Manatees are fully aquatic, mostly herbivorous marine mammals that are sometimes known as sea cows. These funny-looking creatures are endangered because of pollution and fishing techniques.
Paleontologists in Egypt have discovered fossilized bones of an ancient whale that could probably walk on land and swim in water. Scientists found the skull, jaw, and some ribs and identified the parts as the 43-million-year-old ancestor of the modern whale. It's also the earliest type of semi-aquatic whale found in Africa. The whale is estimated to have been 10 meters in length, weighing over half a ton, and was likely a top predator. Scientists say the four-legged whale is a key new species that helps trace the transition of whales from land to sea. Paleontologists believe that the ancestors of modern whales developed from deer-like mammals living on land over a 10-million-year period. The fossilized remains were discovered in Egypt's western desert, which was once covered by sea. A French beekeeper has invented a unique device to keep his beehives safe after suffering a traumatic loss of 35 of them to hungry Asian hornets. The device is a one-way mechanism that baits hornets with sugary water, and once they get in through a funnel, they never come out. Originally, the trap was made of wooden crates and metal mesh, but now they are 3D printed in plastic. Dennis made his first lobster pot to catch the hornets in 2016 and now makes the traps in bulk due to growing demand. The Asian hornets are an invasive insect that arrived in France via a pottery shipment from China. The killer hornet can eat through an entire hive in a matter of hours. There is a festive occasion for a Mexican zoo amid a rare birth boom in its lion enclosure. Keepers and visitors are amazed to hear roars of three newborn cubs. The three baby lions that are trying very hard to roar were born just 2 weeks ago in Zacango Zoo. And the zookeepers separate them from their mother for a few hours a day to feed them because their mother cannot produce milk. The two female and male cubs would live under constant surveillance for a couple of months so that their health is reassured. They are reported to be currently in good health.
A bunker built by the German army in France during World War II has now been given a new lease of life by turning it into an underground guest house. A 4,300 square feet bunker located off Breton coast in northern France was originally built by Nazi troops after invading the country in 1940. The area has been the home of hundreds of such fortifications of the German army. Half of them have been buried along sandy beaches. This underground guest house now belongs to the 52-year-old bunker enthusiast. Serge Goliot says it took 18 months to dig out the buried trench and turn it into a fully functional guest house. He says an attempt was made to preserve some historic aspects during its renovation.
What is nice is to now be able to spend time here, to have dinner, to spend the night in things like this. So we adapted the bunker while preserving a certain feel. We wanted to give the building a second life, so we are not going to live in the past forever. We saved some aspects, you know, where you are. There are historic cues, but this isn't a museum either.
Colliot says many French visitors and foreigners, including Germans, have stayed in the guest house since the bunker opened a year ago. The world's highest expressway has opened to traffic in China's Tibet Autonomous Region. It's nearly 300 kilometers long and has an average elevation of 4,500 meters. It connects the cities of Nanchu and Lhasa, shortening the travel time from 6 to 3 hours. The road passes through many picturesque areas, such as snowy mountains, grasslands, and wetlands. The expressway is also environmentally friendly. Special passages have been devised for animals to get from one side of the freeway to the other. An architectural firm in Singapore has come up with a unique idea to deal with the country's constant warm temperatures. A hotel on the island's busy business district has been covered with more than 20 species of creeping plants,
to keep the place cooler. A layer of vegetation blankets the facade of the Red Tower, which is growing thicker with the passage of time. The plants reduce the ambient temperature by a combination of water evaporation and releasing cooler vapor. The architect says the tower is 10 to 20 degrees Celsius cooler than nearby buildings. The green facades also reduce harmful carbon emissions, which account for over 20% in a spiraling city.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
The youngest panda at the U.S.'s Smith's Dorian Zoo, National Zoo that is, has turned one. Baby panda Xiao Qiji celebrates the milestone by eating a specially made fruitsicle cake with his mother, Mei Xiang, in Washington, D.C. Both pandas dug into their icy cake, an ideal treat in the hot and humid summers of the U.S. capital. Xiao has captured hearts and had many first-time experiences. Some of them include sliding and tumbling around in snow and recognizing his name, which translates to little miracle in English.
He was born during the pandemic, and given the age of his mother, we didn't think she'd have another cub. And the fact that we, not just that we had this miracle, but he has just been, he's given people moments of pure joy and pure happiness.
Xiao Qiji is the fourth surviving cub of Mei Xiang. Its older siblings now live in China under an agreement with the United States. Pandas have been reclassified from endangered to vulnerable thanks to reforestation to expand habitats in which the species can survive. There are an estimated 1,800 giant pandas in the wild.
The annual Buddha sculpture has been unveiled at the New York State Fair to the delight of eager spectators. The artwork was sponsored for the 53rd year by the American Dairy Association. It was carved out of 400 kilograms of butter and took 10 days to build. The sculpture is dedicated to the children who will be going back to their normal lives after the coronavirus pandemic is over. Once the fair ends, all of the butter will be broken down and turned into renewable energy. Switzerland is constructing its biggest alpine solar plant in an effort to secure renewable energy throughout the year. The 2.2 megawatt plant is expected to be completed by the end of 2021. The Mutzi site will include nearly 5,000 solar modules and produce around 3.3 million kilowatt hours of electricity. It will have the option of delivering half of its production during the winter when temperatures drop to sub-zero levels in Switzerland. The developers say the project makes more environmental than fiscal sense. Currently, the country gets less than 4% of its electricity from solar power. An eatery in Japan is giving disabled people a new lease on life by including them in its workforce. Dawn Cafe uses robotic staff controlled remotely by people who are handicapped. Around 50 people with mental and physical disabilities help run the cafe. The pilots come from all over Japan as well as overseas. The venue was established with support from major companies and crowdfunding. It has become more than just a place to eat for its customers.
Customers here are not exactly coming to this location just to meet the Orihime robots. They come here because of the people behind Orihime, and they will come back to see them again.
for Kentaro, Dawn Cafe has a very personal touch. In his childhood, he was left unable to go to school due to a period of bad health. Now he aspires to come up with ways to further the inclusion of disabled people in society. Crowds of visitors and conservationists have been delighted by the birth of a rare orangutan in the Spanish town of Fuengirola. The new residents of the safari park made its first public appearance 2 weeks after its birth. The baby, yet to be named, is the only one to be born in a European zoo over the past 12 months. The park has launched a program to conserve Bornean orangutans that are considered as a critically endangered species. Their population has declined by more than 50% over the past century. Dozens of baby turtles have made their way to the sea after an unexpected overnight hatch in Italy. Italian volunteers were surprised by track marks of the hatchlings from an unknown nest in Sicily. Some of the eggs hatched in the morning. An environmental group following the turtles' movement said that 74 hatchlings made it to the sea, while 5 didn't. The reptiles are an endangered species of oceanic turtle that also live in the Mediterranean Sea. Their population has declined in recent years due to hunting, loss of beach nesting sites, over-harvesting of their eggs, and being caught in fishing gear.
A Slovenian enthusiast has discovered a new cave in the Alpine country, which is staggering visitors by its awe-inspiring looks. Ludvik Husu, a 63-year-old cave explorer, has come across a cavern that runs 60 meters deep in the ground. It's located in the country's karst region, an area of land made up of limestone. Some 14,000 caves are buried under the green forest of Slovenia, hiding away breathtaking stalactite and stalagmite formations. The limestone region is so pristine and uncharted that the European Space Agency has used the caves to train astronauts.
Yeah, astronauts.
Astronauts also know that the karst world is exceptional, special in a similar way to how a space environment can be. It is an unknown environment where you do not know what to expect at your next step. They have been here to train for precisely that, how to help yourself in a dark area where you're not sure what's going on and everything is new. That's very good training for space, and they have been very pleased to be able to prepare for something they might find in space.
Over 150 species, some looking like alien creatures, have been discovered inside the cave systems. They include an ancient aquatic salamander called the little dragon that can live up to 100 years. The animal was previously considered living proof that dragons had once existed. Some cave systems in Slovenia stretch for tens of kilometers. They are so winding and deep that scientists say large parts of them remain undiscovered despite exploration efforts dating back hundreds of years. As the U.S. is experiencing its worst heat wave, Boston zookeepers are working extra hard to keep the animals cool to avoid overheating. Some get frozen treats, and some, like the yak, get a water hosing several times a day when the temperatures rise. The hardest part is cooling down animals belonging to cold climates, like the reindeer. Since reindeer don't like water, the hosing down is a big no. Instead, the poor animals sit in front of a desk fan all day to stay away from the heat. The birds have it a little easier as they spend most of their time in air-conditioned dens.
IRIB English Radio in the month of Muharram presents today's special. every day for 15 minutes.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, salamun alaikum. So welcome to this episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio from Iran. This is today's special and the topic is A Message to Save the World. Today, Tuesday, is the 22nd of Muharram, 1443 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 9th of Shahrivar, 1400 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 31st of August, 2021 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. We bless this moment of today's special by recitation of chapter Nu, verse 28.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Rabbi ighfir li wa li walidayya wa liman dakhala baytiya mu'minan wa lil mu'minina wal mu'minati wa la tazidil zalimina illa tabara.
My Lord, forgive me and my parents and whoever enters my house a believer and the believing men and believing women, and do not increase the wrongdoers except in destruction.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
Invoke Allah Almighty for forgiveness reflects that Noah, the prophet, is saying that he spent hundreds of years in incessantly imparting his prophetic call and forbore all the hardships in the cause of Allah. Though he had to invoke Allah the Almighty to forgive him since he might have had neglected some priority. The invocation reflects that Noah, the prophet, peace be upon him, did not regard himself as totally free from blame. Such friends of Allah the Almighty, after making some many efforts in Allah's cause, still think that they might have made mistakes. But unlike people who, within their small capacities, magnify themselves to the extent that they regard God Almighty obliged to grant them His grace, Allah's friends are never entangled with vanity and egotism.
On the month of Muharram and the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his family and companions, be with today's special. Every day from IRIB English Radio.
People rise up and mourn, it is Ashura. See the struggle of Hussein.
A Message to Save the World. Paying a tribute to Imam al-Hussein, Thomas Carlyle says, "The best lesson which we get from the tragedy of Karbala is that Hussein and his companions were rigid believers in God. They illustrated that their numerical superiority does not count when it comes to the truth and the falsehood. The victory of Hussein, despite his minority, marvels me." By his character, Imam al-Hussein demonstrated that a true believer cannot be a slave of anyone except Allah. His head cannot bow before any dictator. The blood of Hussein was powerful enough to turn the table, and the dormant ummah was awakened by his stroke.
Thank you.
Dr. Fakhr Rohani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim wa bi-nasta'in. In this episode, we are going to be concerned with the main messages of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam for the whole world. Imam al-Hussein some sacrificed whatever was available to him and whatever was in his possession solely in the cause of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in order to enliven the name of Islam and to revive the Quranic teachings in his lifetime and for the rest of history and for the rest of world. Now we find that Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam's messages to the whole world are very much abundant. One of them is that anybody, any nobleman, any noble person should understand that death with dignity is much better and superior and far more superior than living in denigration. If we consider this, this keyword or this, key concept in the teachings of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, we find that not only Muslims, but also all people, irrespective of their religion, faith, language, nationality, or, for example, other criteria or other considerations, everybody should live in a noble state such that nobody would exert any slightest pressure on other people. And from this perspective, we find that based on such notions, such important notions, we find that other people or other dignitaries in other countries, in other cultures, nations, and so on, have received tremendous lessons and conspicuous lessons and insights from this notion as expressed by Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam.
Standing here alone on a land so far from home, a place where angels cry, while innocent children die. Hussein has said goodbye, praying some of them survive the torture and the heat. They can't bear to watch him leave. They cry out, Hussein, ya Hussein,
Muharram, a continuous mission against injustice. Imam fought the battle with Yazid on the spiritual plane. He opposed Yazid's might with his nobility of character, confronted power with powerlessness, and multitudes with want of material support, and defined oppression with suffering and martyrdom. What Imam al-Hussein did is something that is unmatchable as far as the fight for upholding justice and equality is concerned. It was his way of delivering justice when, despite knowing that Hur, the brave commander of Yazid's army, was there to round him up to Karbala, he offered his platoon with water by going thirsty himself. It was his way of delivering justice when he gave his slave an equal place with his other companions along with himself. The real meaning of justice is to give a person or a thing a place it deserves most. An imam did exactly the same. If seen seriously, each and every event of Karbala teaches us how to seek and stand for justice in extremely unfavorable and life-threatening circumstances.
Hussein al-Gharib al-Gharib al-Hussein, Hussein al-Shahid al-Shahid al-Hussein.
The sermon of Imam Sajjad in Kufa. Imam Sajjad said, O people, I put you on your oath to tell me in the name of Allah whether you know that at one time you wrote letters to my father and then deceived him. You made firm promises with him and then rose to fight against him. May Allah destroy you. May you reap the harvest of your misdeeds in both the worlds. And may you be disgraced for the indecent policy which you have adopted. How will you face the Prophet of Allah when you are brought before him on the Day of Judgment, and with which eyes will you look at him? At that time, the Holy Prophet would tell you, "You have killed my children and behaved towards me dishonorably. You are not my followers."
The beauty of the message of Imam Hussein alayhi salam is that it lifts us. It doesn't allow this dunya to captivate our hearts. We live in this dunya. We thank Allah for the blessings that He's given us. We can excel in this dunya in terms of our business, in terms of our even materialistic lifestyle. Allah doesn't tell us to reject His blessings. But the Imam teaches us, don't let this dunya play with your heart. The minute you feel the dunya is pulling you, money is pulling you, power is pulling you, lust is pulling you, something is pulling you, say no. Because eventually it will bring you to your destruction. The reason why the people failed their test during the time of Imam Hussein alayhi salam was because of the dunya. This dunya deceived them. Going forward, be able to protect your heart from this dunya, from the strong, powerful magnet of this dunya, to rise above the materialistic aspect of this dunya, to be indifferent. We have a hadith that states, if Allah loves a person, zahadahu fi dunya, He makes you zahid in this dunya. Now, the word zuhd in Arabic can be translated in a number of ways. Some people say humble, some people say ascetic, leading an ascetic lifestyle. It doesn't really quite capture it. I think the best word that captures the essence of zuhd is indifference. When you're indifferent, I can have millions. I may be a successful businessman, but I'm indifferent to my house, to my car, to my money, to my bank account. Who cares? Can you reach that level where you really feel this way? It doesn't matter. It's just an amana in my hand. It can be taken away any minute from me, and if Allah takes it away from you, okay, it's not the end of the world. I have bigger goals. Can you think at that level? Imam Hussein teaches you, think at that level. Be indifferent to this dunya, because when you're indifferent to this dunya, you pass your test. You don't fall into the trap of materialism. Materialism does not give you comfort. Materialism does not make you content. Rich people are not necessarily comfortable psychologically, mentally, spiritually. They're not content.
Allahumma ij'al mahyaya mahyaya Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa mamati mamata Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Dear friend, that was all for today's special. May all the praises and thanks be to Allah, to whom belongs all that is in heavens and in the earth. May Allah bless all of you. Be with us for another episode of today's special, inshallah. Thank you and fi amanillah.
Hussein, as-salamu.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.